The proliferation of short-term rentals. Short-term rentals such as Airbnb and VRBO are popping up everywhere and are an increasingly popular option for travelers. But not everyone loves them. Communities around the country and around the world are grappling with regulating short-term rentals. Here in Maine, on Election Day, South Portland residents will vote on a plan to limit short-term rentals. Meantime, Rockland is in the midst of a discussion about loosening its regulations. And in Portland, short-term rentals continue to be a contentious issue. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, how this major segment of the sharing economy is affecting communities, both here in Maine and around the world. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. All across Maine, there is an ebb and flow of people who stay at short-term rentals, or people who rent their place out to visitors. But there are also those who do not partake in this practice, and they often object to short-term renters in their neighborhood. Today, we'll learn about how communities are dealing with these competing interests. Joining me in the studio, Tracy Michaud. She is an assistant professor and chair of the Tourism and Hospitality Program at the University of Southern Maine. And Randy Billings is a staff writer at the Portland Press-Herald. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you rent or stay in short-term rentals like Airbnb or VRBO? Do you think it's a plus or minus to your neighborhood? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Tracy, let's start with a definition. What are we talking about when we refer to short-term rentals? What are they and how do they work?
Well, short-term rentals typically refer to rentals of some kind of furnished home, apartment, condo that is less than 6 months. After that, definitions kind of vary. Typically, when we're thinking about vacation rentals, it's anywhere from a few days to up to 30 days or so. And that's different from a long-term rental, which is typically about a year at a time. So many people that have apartments or whatnot have year leases that they do, and many times that goes on for many years.
And the internet has really changed this, but it really isn't a new phenomenon, is it? I mean, people have been staying in places in Maine, whether it's on a lake or on the ocean or up in the mountains, a week at a time, 2 weeks at a time, for a long time.
Yeah, Maine has a long heritage of short-term rentals. Vacation homes that are rented out on lakes and on the ocean. We've been doing this for a couple of hundred years, actually. And it's just recently, in the last 10 years, really, with the rise of Airbnb, that we've seen kind of an explosion and a consolidation of those rentals through the internet on some of these platforms. But in the past, it was done through word of mouth. Many realtors do it for clients, and so there's a lot of other platforms, but really it's the last 10 years that it has consolidated through the internet.
Sure, Randy. This morning I was doing some reading about other cities. It looks like New Orleans, San Diego, Washington, D.C. are all voting on some sort of short-term rental ordinance in October, and then other cities, New York City, Virginia Beach, Charleston, Vancouver, Nashville, something before the city hall. So this is the city council. This is something that's going on all over. Here in Portland, you've been covering it as the city of Portland has been trying to grapple with this. Where are we? What does the city of Portland allow and not allow, and how has it been received?
Well, Portland has been regulating short-term rentals since earlier this year, and they came up with a regulatory system that requires people to register their properties with the city, and they're broken down into two different categories. You have an owner-occupied category and then an unhosted or a non-owner-occupied category. And then over the course of the year, it's sort of this non-owner-occupied category that's really generated a lot of heat in residential neighborhoods, and primarily because people had two different ideas on how they were defining a non-owner-occupied. The city was identifying it as a owner-occupied or non-owner-occupied building. So it means if I owned a five-unit apartment building and I lived in one of the units, I could register all of those as an owner-occupied building. So they set a cap on the non-owner-occupied registries. So this was an effort to sort of minimize the impact on the long-term housing market and to prevent sort of hotels from, basically unlicensed hotels from operating in residential areas. But the city wasn't hitting that cap because the way they defined owner-occupied, it was, so basically the ordinance was ineffective in that regard. They thought they had 150 non-owner-occupied commercial units. Turns out they have over 316, which is over the cap, and that got a lot of people upset.
So what Portland's going through is kind of an example why this is so hard to regulate, so hard to figure out.
Well, I mean, the thing is, Portland has some regulations. So with the registry, they know who's doing these units, and then they have an outside company that monitors sites like Airbnb, and they do a comparative thing, and they say, okay, well, this one's not even registered. You guys should go send them a notice. But really, it was just a misunderstanding on how some of these things were being counted. The city had a lot more of these commercial enterprise sort of short-term rentals, and a lot fewer the ones that are sort of, I live in my apartment, I'm going to rent out a bedroom to someone and show them the city type things. Whole apartments were being used for this.
Right. Well, joining us now on the line is Josh O'Rainey, the assistant city manager of South Portland. Thanks for calling in, Josh.
I'm happy to be on your program.
So I know that a lot of Maine communities are discussing this, but in South Portland, this is actually an item on the November ballot. When did South Portland begin to feel the impact of short-term rentals being more prevalent? Is this fairly recent in South Portland?
Well, it's something that's been growing over the past few years, and it really came to a head about a year ago. It was in October of 2017 when the City Council first scheduled it for a workshop session and began the discussion about how to regulate these types of activities.
We think of Portland as other hot tourist spots as always having more. Why has it reached South Portland?
Oh, goodness. It's really the greater Portland area, and it's in other communities as well. But I think where it's being felt the most, or at least it's come up and these controversies have bubbled up, have been in the more densely populated areas, in the residential neighborhoods where the houses are very close to one another, whereas it's less of an issue when you get out to Cape Elizabeth or other communities that are a little bit more rural.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the primary objections and some of the primary support, reasons to support short-term rentals. What are you hearing in your town?
Sure. Well, let me go back and just talk a little bit about how this came up and some of the issues that we're facing. As most people know, housing affordability is an issue in the community in the greater Portland area as well. We have a very low inventory, and so people have been talking about, you know, if these houses or these apartments are coming off of the market, how is that impacting the ability of folks to buy a home or find an affordable rent? There are also some noise and parking issues that came up, and that truly is really what brought it to a head last year, is during the summer when the weather was nicer and people are lying in bed at night with their windows open, hearing people sitting in the backyard of a neighboring property and gabbing all night and having a few drinks and whatnot, sitting by a campfire and you know that happens even in just a regular, you know, permanent residential situation. But when people are visiting the community for the weekend or for the week and they're looking at some fun, it's more common, I suppose. And then the other question that came up was, well, what about the character of the neighborhoods? You know, if this is becoming more prevalent and more of these homes are transitioning from a long-term rental or an owner situation to a short-term rental situation, how does that impact the character of the neighborhood and what does it do to other neighbors, and how does it make them feel if they feel like they can't walk across the street and ask for some sugar or coffee or something that they ran out of? What does that do?
And on the other hand, though, people who own these properties say, I've fixed them up. They're nice, and I'm contributing to the neighborhood, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, there is something to say about that as well. You know, we want to be a welcoming community, and certainly tourism is big and it's good for the economy. There is an economic benefit that does come with this, but there needs to be balance. And so in conversations we've been having with both the proponents and the opponents, one thing is it holds true across the board is that everybody agrees that there needs to be some regulation. The controversy is how to go about regulating. Some of the proponents say, well, you know, there could be very thoughtful regulation put in place that, you know, requires each of the properties to license or register. And if they're not doing what they should be and they're allowing guests to be loud and they're causing problems in the neighborhood, then pull their license and shut them down and don't let them do that. But if people are keeping their noses clean and, you know, the guests are respecting the property and respecting the neighborhood, then that should be allowed to continue.
Well, Josh, thanks so much for calling in. He's Assistant City Manager of South Portland. Again, this is on the ballot in November. What, Josh, if it's passed and if it's defeated, what happens then?
Okay, well, I'll start by saying what happens if it's passed. The ordinance that folks are being asked to consider, what it does is it expressly regulates short-term rentals, and we're defining those as stays of 29 days or less. So if you're a 30-day rental situation, we're going to treat that as a month-to-month rent, and this really doesn't apply. So it's a one-week rental or a weekend rental and things like that. We categorize them into two groups, hosted homestays and unhosted homestays. An unhosted homestay would be a situation where you may have a single family home. The owner does not live there. It may be an investment property or it may be a property that they used to live in and they've moved down the street, and but they continue to keep the property, and rather renting it to a long-term tenant, they rent to short-term tenants. The other is the hosted homestay, and that would be a situation where the owner does live there, is present, and they're either renting a portion of their home, maybe a bedroom or two, while the owner is there, or they can leave up to 2 weeks per year. There's an exception in the ordinance that allows them to leave and not be present, but it caps it at 2 weeks. And so that would be considered a hosted homestay. The ordinance expressly would allow hosted homestays, and it would prohibit unhosted homestays in residential zones.
All right. And if it's defeated, does this go back to the city council for a new set of rules?
Well, it does. There are a few options, and that's certainly one of them. The city council will be able to decide whether or not there's a different type of regulation or to approach it differently and try to adopt something that wouldn't be challenged.
All right.
Or the other option is to leave it alone and let the code enforcement office make their determination of whether they believe that under the current code it's allowed or prohibited. And the risk with that is that we very well could end up in a civil lawsuit.
Well, Josh, thanks so much for calling in. Assistant City Manager in South Portland. Tracy, what Josh is talking about, these are the same kind of issues that cities around the country and around the world are talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And while there's a lot of intense debate about it, I think it's a really positive thing to be talking about, especially at this point before things have got to the point where there's some major, major trouble or issues. So I think in the community development work that I teach students at the university, we talk a lot about understanding visitors' needs and providing for that. And in Maine, we're a very independent culture, and we respect people's need and ability to get out and earn some extra income in different ways. But when you balance that with the needs of a community and keeping a place that's livable and some place that someone actually wants to live, when you balance those, that tends to be the most sustainable way to move forward. So I think that the communications that they've had in South Portland have been a really good example of how to try to do this. They've had, I think, 6 or 7 community forums talking to the community about it, have come up with some policies, which I think is the first community in Maine to try to put something in place based on zoning, so residential versus commercial areas. But there are other communities throughout the world that are doing those same things. New York City has some zoning-based ordinances that they're trying to enforce. Japan and other places have put restrictions on Airbnb. So I think that this is apropos to what's going on in the nation and the world around short-term rentals.
Randy, how much of this do you think is tied in with, whether we're talking about South Portland or Portland, which you cover, just gentrification in general, that, you know, you're seeing rents go up? And are the rents going up because of the short-term rentals, or would they be going up anyway?
Well, the rents have been going up in Portland for quite some time. They've sort of leveled off over the last few years, but it really feeds into that perception that existing residents have that, you know, there was that, you know, 40% rent increase for 5 years, you know, leading up to 2015 that we reported on with the housing crisis. And, you know, people's wages aren't rising like that. So it's getting harder to afford places in the city. It's getting harder to find open apartments. So when folks see that, you know, there are over 300 potential apartments that are being taken off the market and being turned into a short-term rental where a landlord can make, you know, a month's rent in a weekend, you know, that adds a lot of anxiety to people who work in the city, who don't have transportation. You know, we're talking like the lower wage workers, the people that pour your coffee, serve your food and things like that. There's a sense that there are fewer places for these folks to live. And short-term rentals are one piece of that. No one is blaming it on them completely. But when they see whole apartments coming off the market, people say, wait, this isn't helping.
There's been a little bit of research at the national level because Airbnb and other platforms, we're really talking about the last 10 years, there's not a lot of good research on it yet. But what is starting to be shown is there is a small correlation, at least, to the more Airbnbs, let's say, or short-term rentals. For every 1%, there's a 1.3% higher rental rate. So there is some kind of connection there. So it's definitely should be a part of the conversation.
And Randy, another group that we haven't really discussed yet is hotels. A lot of hotels have gone up in Portland. At the same time, a lot more Airbnbs have gone up. They seem to be pretty full, especially in the summertime. But do hotels have a problem with the proliferation of Airbnbs and VRBOs?
Well, I think if you ask them, they will definitely say, well, you know, this is something we're watching, we're concerned about because we have all these regulations and stuff we have to do. And if anyone can just open up an inn in their house, then, you know, where's the fairness in that? But to be honest, like in Portland right now, what you said is exactly right. They've added like hundreds of hotel rooms. They're full all the time. They're fetching a premium. And yet the demand for short-term rentals is still really high. And when you talk to folks who do this, they say, we're an option to bring people into the city who might not otherwise be able to afford to come. So maybe it's a family of like, you know, 4, 5, 6 people. You can't really get a hotel room, an affordable hotel room that big to bring them in. Or it's someone who just wants to get a little more local flavor. So they rent out a room in someone else's apartment and someone who lives here can show them the coffee shops and explain things like that. So people will say they're two different people. But yeah, there's no shortage of.
Yeah. And you're nodding, Tracy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that many hotels would point to the competition aspect of it. But I think in other ways, there's influences. Short-term rentals in some ways became popular because of that concept of authenticity, right? Staying in a neighborhood house versus in a hotel that's in a commercial zone and whatnot, and the attraction of that. And so in the big national or international trends, you actually see hotels now starting to try to create more of that type of experience. So hotel rooms that are more like a suite or a home versus just the hotel room. So there's other ways that it's influencing the industry. And for sure, the hotel industry is paying attention because they see the impact of it.
And you look at, you bring up the authenticity, and I think there's a certain irony there because you look up at Munjoy Hill and you see how many buildings have short-term rentals. And I think there's a sense of people who actually live on Munjoy Hill that you got a lot of people who aren't from here. They come out on the street and they start looking for the authenticity, and there they all are with their suitcases.
Which is the same thing going on in Paris, France, and Barcelona, Spain, and in Venice, Italy. We do have to take a quick break. We're talking about short-term rentals. This is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
Election Day is more than 2 weeks away, but early voting has already begun in many states. Do you want to hear how your fellow citizens are voting or planning to vote this November? Join us for America on the Line, live every Monday through Thursday nights, for news, analysis, and calls from listeners around the country. It's a national conversation about the 2018 midterms from WNYC.
America on the Line will be heard at 8 each Monday through Thursday evening leading into the election. The rebroadcast of Maine Calling will follow at 9 o'clock. You've heard the tones before. Here on Maine Public Radio and perhaps on Maine Public Television, Maine Public is the designated primary source for the entire state of Maine emergency alert system, which we transmit to all other stations for broadcasts to all listeners and viewers all around the state. It's a valuable and important public service tool to help inform, alert, and warn citizens when situations warrant, and Maine Public's statewide infrastructure enables it to fulfill this vital task and public service.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the rise in short-term rentals and what it means for communities in Maine. Joining me in the studio, Randy Billings, who is a staff writer with the Portland Press-Herald, and Tracy Michaud, chair of USM's Tourism and Hospitality Program. We invite you to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining me on the line now, Karen Horn. She is Assistant Professor of Economics at UMass Boston. Karen, thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I understand you were involved in a study of what we were talking about before the break, the effects of short-term rentals on a market. What did you find?
So we looked at the impact of short-term rentals in Boston on the rental listings, the price of rental listings in Boston. And we find some impact, a small, modest impact of the Airbnb on rent. So to give you a little bit of a sense of the magnitude, so in a high-density neighborhood with a lot of Airbnb, maybe we have like 50 Airbnb units for 1,000 rentals. So that would translate to about a mean rent in Boston of $2,900, $2,900 rent. That would be about $100 increase on rent for in that kind of a neighborhood. So that's just to give you a sense of the magnitude of the impact we found in Boston.
Sure, and you also
a
studied
a neighborhood with a high intensity.
So that's a high intensity, sort of the most. You also studied the effect of taxes charged by those places and whether the funds can be turned around to help a community. What did you find there?
Well, we didn't study that, but we sort of suggested that that's a potential use. So a reason to tax Airbnb is that there is a cost to having these units in our residential neighborhoods. And a really good, a solid economic argument for why we should tax these units is that this money can then be turned around and put back into helping create an affordable rental market in an expensive city like the one I live in.
Do you sense that short-term rentals are on a path of being more of a given, not just in New England, but everywhere? Will they eventually be accepted as part of our culture and economy?
I don't know. I think that for the younger generation, it already is the case. I think that as more short-term rentals spill into more traditionally residential neighborhoods that are not used to tourists or don't expect tourists in their neighborhoods, that more political arguments will come about. But that in the predominantly tourist neighborhoods in Boston, I think that people already accept it as a given.
Mm. Well, Karen, thanks so much for calling in. Karen Horn with the University of Massachusetts in Boston, an assistant professor of economics. Thanks for calling in. Now we're going to turn to another guest on the line, John Root, who is the code enforcement officer for the city of Rockland. Hi, John. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Jennifer. Well, thank you for having me.
I understand there was just a public workshop in Rockland yesterday to talk about this very topic. What's being discussed in your community?
Last evening, there was a public workshop that was held, and that was to begin the discussions of where we go from here. Actually, last March, the City Council imposed a cap on permits for non-owner-occupied short-term rentals, and that was due to the concern of concentration of short-term rentals in certain neighborhoods. So for the this last season, only owner-occupied short-term rentals have been permitted since that cap was in place. And anyone who was applying for anything else was put on a waiting list. And there was a slight surge before the cap was in place during the amendment process. So, you know, that was to be expected, those who wanted to get in before they couldn't. So
now are you considering allowing non-owner-occupied or non-hosted rentals to come onto the market?
Well, there was really no conclusion. For the meeting last night, I sent notices of the meeting to all short-term rental owners and their managers, as well as the abutters of the short-term rentals. And that was to get an even playing field in terms of who's going to be there to comment. There was a full house at the meeting, but it consisted mostly of owners and managers with a smaller number of neighbors. The meeting was quite civil, and everyone walked away devoid of bodily injuries, so it really went pretty well. The council heard from all the parties, including an innkeeper whose biggest concern is a level playing field with regards to code requirements and taxes. A few neighbors expressed concerns of losing the neighborhood character and occasional rowdy guests, none of which I got complaints for. The council did appreciate the input, but really no conclusions were reached. But it did appear that a proposed amendment lifting the cap on the non-owner-occupied short-term rentals might not pass. All did agree, however, that a committee to study the impacts of the short-term rentals should be formed, most feeling that that should be done before lifting the cap. And that study would include the impact on monthly rentals, neighborhood character, the issue of dark neighborhoods, whether investors should be limited to a certain number of short-term rentals, if inspection for code compliance should be done for short-term rentals, and if there would be a way to assess a tax to maybe make it a little more even playing field. I mean, after all, most people feel that this is a business, and businesses are taxed differently than residences. So.
All right. Well, thanks so much. That's John Root, Code Enforcement Officer for the City of Rockland. Tracy, the difference between what's going on in Portland, South Portland, and Rockland is illustrative of a larger phenomenon, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the rural versus urban areas are going to have different issues. And that's why it's so important that all these different communities have conversations. The conversation up in Rockland is going to be different than down in Portland. Conversation in Dover, Foxcroft, or Fort Fairfield, Maine is going to be different. In rural areas, let's say, where there aren't any major hotels, maybe not even bed and breakfasts there, something like short-term rentals out of houses is not going to be an issue around taking apartments and whatnot necessarily off the market like it would be in Portland, and probably would be a really, really good thing for those regions that people might want access to but just don't have any place to stay there.
Sure, maybe someplace really rural where somebody might rent out their rooms during hunting season, for example, or something like that. We're going to move to David, who's calling from Portland. Hi, David. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi there. Thanks for having me. I'm calling. I'm an Airbnb host in Portland, and I used to be when I bought a duplex and I let the tenants stay who came with it. It was two people on the lease, seven people were living there. There was dealing drugs. It was a nightmare. I don't know if you all know, but it's very hard to evict people, so I had to go through the process of not renewing the lease. After finally getting them out, I had a $25,000 repair bill. I ended up sleeping in the renovation and Airbnb in my own apartment, and then I had to move into doing Airbnb in the downstairs unit to make up for the loss. Airbnb saved my life and saved my building, and I think that, you know, there's a lot more to reasons why people end up doing it. I'm transitioning out of it now into long-term rental after making the money back, and the Airbnb market has changed in the 3 years of doing it, so just want to throw that out there. Thank you.
David, thanks for calling. And that's one thing I've noticed in your reporting, Randy, is these profiles of people who do participate, are Airbnb hosts. It's not just one type of person doing it for one reason.
Yeah, no, it runs the gamut. I mean, it could be, you know, a longtime homeowner in Portland, you know, in their 60s, retiring, maybe fixed income, and they're renting a room or an apartment here or there to help pay the property taxes. Or it's, you know, people who are finding a way to be able to afford and live in the city new. So they buy a duplex or a triple decker. They live in one and they rent out the other. The caller brings up a good point about the condition of the housing stock because, you know, we went through that recession. I mean, there were a lot of housing, just safety and quality of life issues with Portland's housing stock, which was really old. And the city enacted a bunch of new regulations after the Noyes Street fire where six young people, you know, were killed on Halloween night. And a lot of landlords had struggled over the years to come up with the money to upgrade their buildings. And Airbnb, I have heard that a few times, that it's allowed them to make those necessary upgrades.
Yeah, and also the whole issue of how difficult it was for him to evict someone. So this is tangled into other issues as well. You know, I own a building. Which is going to be an easier way to be a landlord?
Yeah, and, you know, again, I think a lot of landlords, where I think it's rare that someone would say, here's your eviction notice, get out, I'm doing a short-term rental. I think just the amount of money that landlords can make, like there was one resident who wrote to the city council and said, I have this one room that I'm renting out. I can make 30 grand off that one room, but if I were to turn that into a studio, I'd only make $15,000. So I think, you know, when people's leases are coming up at the natural expiration, I think landlords are kind of doing a harder second look and saying, you know, there's a way to make more money at this.
Sarah on Facebook writes, I'm currently in Glasgow, finishing up a 3-week tour of Scotland. Through Airbnb, we are able to stay in a stone cottage with a 10,000 square foot Cold War bunker attached, a refurbished stable hands apartment, a shepherd's caravan trailer, an old schoolhouse, a stone cottage, and more. Airbnb gives us an amazing variety of rentals in remote places, and the hosts are often a wealth of useful information in areas that aren't always covered in travel books. So Tracy, Sarah's hitting the nail on the head about why people like Airbnb so much.
Yeah, that authenticity, and also, you know, the research is showing that the bang for the buck, the amount of money you spend, you get a better living arrangements, maybe get a kitchen or a better view. And so, again, I think this is the challenge of the hotel industry to rise to that, to see how they can match that in order to then get back some of that business.
All right. So we're going to move on to Karen, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi. I live on Munjoy Hill, and it's funny that we're having this conversation because six of us property owners on Waterville Street, we all had the same concept is owner occupied is fine, renting out rooms, one host, one unit is fine. But these non-owner occupies are causing problems for us. On Waterville Street alone, we have at least 15 non-owner occupied, and this is causing problems with parking, noise every weekend, people accidentally entering property. Our residential zones is supposed to be legally to conserve long-term housing. So these non-owner occupies is going against what the residential zoning basically says. There are many cities that have already converted to one host, one unit, or owner-occupied unit only. San Francisco, Washington, D.C., Toronto, McGill University in Montreal had a study last August that stated the way to not affect neighborhoods is having owner-occupied units only. We've definitely felt the effect of non-owner occupied short-term rentals on Munjoy Hill, and then especially Waterville Street.
All right. Well, Karen, thanks so much for adding your voice to the conversation. That is one way to regulate it. I'm looking at an article here. Some cities limit the number of days a year. Amsterdam, 60 days a year. London, 90 days a year. Another way to look at this issue that's happening. We have an email from Sarah. I live in a small town on the coast. This summer, I could feel the difference Airbnb was making. It was crowded. Things like the farmers market were just too crowded to attend. The restaurants were often packed with no seats, and trying to make a left turn was impossible. Grocery shopping became an early morning affair, and most of the summer, things like milk and yogurt were sold out. In the co-op, the bread would disappear within minutes of delivery. The shelves were depressingly empty most days. The streets of our small town were crowded with wandering tourists. There's not much to do here. No beaches or parks. Well, there's one beach, and it became so crowded, no locals go there anymore. Many people I know are renting parts of their houses or garage apartments through Airbnb. And although I don't begrudge them the income, what's happening to our small town and the peninsula it's located on is a disaster. I don't know what the answer is. I just know what's happening now is not good. And I don't think it's good for the businesses either. They can't keep up. She is summarizing the debate, isn't she?
Right. It's always this balance when you're talking about tourism, because people are probably coming to that small community because it's that small community feel and all that. But if they all become tourists and it's too crowded to get to the farmers market, then that sort of takes away from why people might want to come. And so it's why these communities need to have these conversations about what's the right limit or regulation so you can keep it as a special place for people to visit and live.
We're going to take another quick break, but first a word about tomorrow's program. We're going to have a conversation about the role municipal planners play in your community. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet us or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield, committed to driving transformation for a healthier future for the people of Maine. Anthem.com.
Nobody knew healthcare could be so complicated.
18% of our GDP.
From Intelligence Squared US, where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues, four leading healthcare professionals debate this topic. Will retail alliances, not Washington, save the US healthcare system? Or are retail providers really just like
meeting with the nurse across a card table in a broom closet?
Join us for Intelligence Squared following Maine Calling at 2 o'clock. Maine Public Radio, television, and online will be holding Your Vote 2018 debates for the gubernatorial, Senate, and Maine's two congressional districts. These debates will be broadcast multiple times on both radio and television and will be available anytime on demand on mainepublic.org. They're taking place this coming Sunday and Tuesday. We have the complete broadcast schedule for both radio and television online at mainepublic.org, along with other candidate profiles and interviews and election information compiled by the Maine Public News team. Just click on the Your Vote banner or click on News and go directly to MainePublic/YourVote.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program Regulating Short-Term Rentals. And joining us today in the studio, Tracy Michaud with USM's Tourism and Hospitality Program and Randy Billings with the Portland Press Herald. Randy, tomorrow a decision in Portland.
The City Council's Housing Committee, they're going to take up a whole slate of potential changes to their short-term rental program. And that committee will send a full recommendation to the City Council. One change they've already put to the council is changing how they define this owner versus non-owner occupied to try to bring the city back down closer to its cap on non-hosted rentals. They're also going to consider the mayor's proposal to drastically increase fees, registration fees, by up to 400%. The mayor said he's kind of backing off that at this point, but the committee will take a vote on it, so it's still live. And then they're just a whole slate of changes, too many to sort of summarize here, but another one would be to reduce the maximum number of short-term rentals that people can register. Right now, a person can do up to 5. Staff is recommending maybe ratcheting that back down to 3.
All right. Well, we're going to go to John, who's calling in South Portland. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I've been doing short-term rentals in South Portland for over 20 years. I think there is an economic benefit to our neighborhoods. As Josh Rennie said, we want to be a welcoming community here in South Portland, but I think we've gone about it the wrong way. We've basically over-regulated it, and by insisting on having no unhosted homes, we've really regulated it and eliminated most of the short-term rentals in South Portland by doing that, because very few families go on vacation for a week and rent a house and to have the owner stay with them. We have had a long history of doing this in Maine, as your speaker mentioned earlier, for the last couple of hundred years. And we are in favor of regulation. But I think it's got to be more thought out than it's been here in South Portland. And there has to be Rockland recommended, Rockland was speaking about having a committee and getting the community involved in this. This is the new economy. This is what's happening today in the world. There's less than 2% of the rentals in South Portland are short-term rentals. And the fact that we're a coastal community is what's driving the prices up on property here in our neighborhoods. There are some short-term rentals. People have come in and done that and bought houses. But for the most part, they're good neighbors. And through regulation and through enforcement, I think we can come to something that will work for everybody. And I hope that's how this will ultimately end up in South Portland. So thank you for listening.
Yeah, well, John, thank you for calling in. And we'll take another call from South Portland. This is Dan. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm with Neighbors for Neighborhoods. I live in South Portland. I live in the same neighborhood as John. And I can tell you that this has not been going on for quite some time in South Portland. It's completely overtaking our neighborhood, and it's making it very, very sad to live in a community. We've lived in, my wife and I, we raised children for many years in that neighborhood, and it's completely changing. While canvassing, our group has found that virtually 100% of folks that we talk to do not want one or more hotels next to their place of refuge. They understand that all residential neighborhoods are vulnerable unless we have the protection that our city council has wisely enacted.
All right. Well, Dan, thank you so much for calling and adding your voice to the conversation as well. We're going to go to an email from Justin. I am a founding board member of the Vacation Rental Professionals of Maine that represents over 90 rental agencies in Maine. Over 25% of short-term rentals in Maine are professionally managed, not Airbnb or VRBO. This leads to significant jobs in Maine. Thousands of people are needed to clean, service, and maintain these homes. Our records show that in 2016, vacation rentals contributed over $4 billion of the Maine economy, and that actually more people stayed in a short-term rental in Maine than a hotel. Our studies show vacation renters spend more retail dollars in Maine than those staying in a hotel. Is your research, Tracy, does that sound about right? $4 billion?
Well, what we're seeing is that there's been huge increases, like 45% in this past summer and whatnot, and certainly they contribute in the millions of dollars in Maine and New England. So I'm not sure about those exact numbers, but it is a significant impact for sure.
We'll go to Laura calling from Ellsworth. Hi, Laura. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, we are both hosts and confirmed Airbnb travelers. And I just want to say, first of all, it's two different, you're talking about completely different pictures when you're talking about Airbnbs in cities and Airbnbs in rural areas where they are a lifeline for people who are often patched together a living with various jobs, you know, and when you can do an Airbnb too. It's enabled us to travel. I mean, it's been such an equalizer, you know. We wouldn't be traveling at all. It's not a case of we'd be staying in a hotel. It's a case of we wouldn't be traveling. And my family can afford to travel because we go to Airbnb and we make our meals in our apartment that we're renting or whatever. I hear people complaining. I heard a caller complain about her neighborhood on the coast being invaded. Well, you know, it's just really nice when you're just part of the hoi polloi and you're not a wealthy person that you can go to places like this. And so there's just going to be a period of adjustment, I think, and then, you know, we'll work out these problems through regulation. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Laura, thank you.
Yeah, throughout the world, more and more people are being able to afford to travel, mass tourism. And so short-term rentals, they tend to have lesser prices for things and making that more accessible because rich people shouldn't be the only ones that get to go to all the beautiful places in the world. I agree with that. However, as other callers have pointed out, when it fundamentally transforms residential areas, there should be a conversation about how to move forward.
We'll go to Noelle calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Noelle. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call, and I appreciate the conversation. I really feel like having a conversation is just about the changing time. You talked about Portland and the amount of hotels that have sprung up and they're not really feeling the difference. And I've been in Maine for about 25 years, and I've seen the increase in what's happening. And I will say, I own a two-unit in South Portland. I've been renting that out for about 9 years. And the amount of people that we've had come through there that end up turning around and becoming residents for the state of Maine has been phenomenal. And we care about our neighborhoods. We care about sending them to the local shops and supporting the local businesses. I think it should be a conversation. I do agree with John about regulation, and I do understand the impact that it will have on the neighborhoods. And I think that there can be a good conversation around regulations that work for all parties involved and that benefits the state.
Thank you for your call, Noel.
Yeah, in the Portland, there's, I mean, they did talk about this for, you know, a year or two before they enacted the regulations. And then over this last year, as these issues have sort of popped up, there's a little more of an urgency, I guess, in an urban setting, because there's sort of this irreversible nature. I think a lot of people feel that the more people who begin to have Airbnb and they get registered, they sort of establish their right to have that. So if they get too far down the road, they can't really unwind it if they've found that it's taken up all this valuable housing. So the caller and what we've been talking about, just the difference between the rural and the urban, it's right on point.
An email from Christopher. I live in Bar Harbor and know several people who have not had their yearly rental lease agreements renewed because the owners of their apartments chose to switch over to short-term rentals. Also, there are several people I know that have bought existing homes and or built new homes specifically for Airbnb rentals. And thirdly, I have heard of people building Airbnbs as retirement plans.
Yeah, I recently did a story because the city, when they were talking about changing this definition of non-owner versus owner-occupied, I talked to someone and they said, look, we currently live up in Auburn. We're moving to Portland. It's part of our retirement plan. We're going to live in this one unit, and we're going to have these other two units, and that's how we've decided we were going to make things meet. And when the city kind of hit a pause button there, they had already invested like $20,000 into like a new kitchen and things like that. These are in Maine is what, the oldest state in the nation, one of the oldest states in the nation. So this retirement argument and this using short-term rentals for retirement is certainly a powerful one here, I think.
Okay, we'll go to Jeff calling from South Portland. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I want to say, first of all, to Laura, my credentials as being a member of the Hoi Polloi are, I think, perfectly intact. So I want to speak from that perspective. And also to say that to the guy who called in from the vacation rental professionals, we do know that the 9% tax that people pay when they pay it to short-term rentals doesn't go to people in South Portland, which is where I'm from, but it goes to the state of Maine. So like Dan, I belong to Neighbors for Neighborhoods, and I just want to reinforce what Josh Rennie had to say about the equity, the fairness of the process that we've been through, reinforcing, too, what Tracy commented about, that there have been many community forums over the course of this last year. We have talked for months and months and months about this. And I suppose if you just timed out how much conversation there have been hours and hours of that. So this has been a long community process to arrive at the ordinances that we are in favor of. And again, to say, they allow short-term rentals as long as people are willing to remain in the neighborhood and host those rentals.
Sure. Well, thank you, Jeff. Thank you very much. We also have an opposing email from Adam that says, my neighborhood in South Portland has become mostly short-term rentals in the last few years. Honestly, the buildings look much better now, and the tenants are less rowdy than the permanent residents. We just have a few minutes left, but I want to touch on, and I want to ask you, Randy, is this really part of a bigger question of the lack of affordable housing in the greater Portland area? I mean, is this sort of a subset problem of a much larger problem?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there hasn't been a lot of affordable housing development in Portland since the economy turned around. It's all been market rate. It's all been luxury. And, you know, the working class folks in Portland are seeing these high-rise condominiums go up. They're seeing tourism sort of bustle, and they're finding it harder and harder to find a place to live. So when they see, you know, that more than 300 units are potentially coming off the market, you know, they just see a further dwindling of the supply. So I think in some regards, just sort of that economic anxiety, it's, you know, right now, something easy for people to point to, it's the short-term rentals is affecting that.
And Tracy, is there anywhere in the world that's got this figured out?
I don't know as of yet, but most of the places in the world, I think, are having these conversations and trying to figure them out. There's lots of different ways to approach it through taxes and fees that then go toward housing, putting limits on, having levels of complaints before being kicked off. And so I think nobody has it quite figured out yet, but people are working really hard at it.
And, you know, go ahead, Randy.
Well, I was just going to say, every year the legislature seems to take up a proposal for a local option sales tax. And part of me, and what that would essentially do would allow a community to tack on a percent or two here or there to things like lodging taxes. So if part of me wonders if, you know, STRs or short-term rentals are so widespread, especially in cities and things like that, if maybe this would be the year that a coalition would form and say, instead of turning this down, let's approve this so folks can sort of get that 1% on the lodging, do something with it in their own community like Portland, and maybe start to try to incentivize more affordable housing.
We have an email from Benjamin. Seems like a lot of this debate from the no short-term rental side of the argument revolves around Mainers trying to have their cake and eat it too. It's a good thing that tourists and the money that comes with them are flooding into this area. My advice for everybody to get out during the winter and enjoy all that that beautiful season has to offer. So thanks, Benjamin, for that call. I just want to turn to you for a last word here, Tracy. I asked Randy if he thought this was, you know, just part of the lack of affordable housing. And I want to ask you if this is part of what we were talking about earlier, that just more people are traveling.
Yeah, there's been a rise in tourism in general throughout the world as the world gets richer and third world countries develop and whatnot, and things become more accessible, more people are traveling. And so not just short-term rentals, but just concepts of over-tourism or sustainable tourism, this is all part of that conversation. So we're in a transition phase, and we're seeing the growing pains in the debates and how we regulate and decide how to go forward. So the conversation is good.
Well, thank you both for being here. Such an interesting conversation. We could go on and on and on. Tracy Michaud, you just heard, assistant professor and chair of the Tourism and Hospitality Program at the University of Southern Maine, and Randy Billings, a staff writer at the Portland Press Herald who's covered this issue in the city of Portland. John Keimel ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight, this week, at 9 instead of 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.